Thank you, Rick. The next gentleman I'd like to introduce is a fellow who suffered with me for 8 years. He's one of the last of the originals down here in Dallas. After 11 years, he finally scored a touchdown on the ground this year, and I guess he figured he had enough of it, so he figured to throw it all in. You remember in New Orleans, he ran an end around. We finally gave him the ball, and he went 56 yards for a touchdown. After the game, he announced his retirement from football. I tell you, you can talk about all the Bob Hayeses and the Lance Renssels, who are the boys who are emerging now with the great performances, but the fellow that's going to speak to you next is a guy who still holds our record with the most receptions in one season. In 1964, he caught 65 passes. He made All-Pro in 1964 with our team, which was a great honor for us because at that stage of the game, we were still just barely breathing, and that was about all. But Frank has been a great asset to the Dallas Cowboy team for many years. He started out in high school in Beloit, Wisconsin. He went to Colorado at Trinidad Junior College, went on to the University of Colorado, where his senior year he made two great catches against Missouri to beat him in a key game to bring Colorado into the Orange Bowl. He went to the Cleveland Browns first after he came out of college and played with them for 3 years, and then he came with us in 1960, where he emerged a star in the National Football League. He's caught many passes for us, over 5,000 yards and over 50 touchdowns for us over his career. He has a wonderful family, his wife Sandy and two boys and a girl. He just took a year's absence from his job with the Federal Housing Administration to take over as youth coordinator for the mayor's council on their youth program here, the Youth Opportunity Program. And this speaks highly for the type of boy that Frank Clark is. And it's been one of my real pleasures in football to be able to coach Frank Clark. Come on, Frank.
Thank you very much, Tom. I wish he could be that nice on some of these Sunday afternoons that I've seen him a little bit different. I appreciate very, very much having the opportunity to be here tonight to share with you some things that have come to mean a great deal to me. And without hesitation, I would say that easily in the past 3 years, some of these things have become to mean a great deal to me because of the fine gentleman that just introduced me. Before I go any further, I would like to say that I had one of those bathrooms that burned. I really did. It was a devastating loss, though, because it was a three-seater. As you can probably well imagine, we got some guys on our football team that are, for want of any better words, are too much. Let me tell you a story about Willie Towns. Willie Towns is probably weighing a little under 310 right now, but let me just emphasize it by saying he's a pretty big boy. He tells a story about the time that he went bear hunting. And he's talking to this friend of his, and he's telling this friend of his this experience that he had hunting bear. He said that he went bear hunting and he was having a little difficulty catching up and running up on any bear, and knowing Willie, he got tired awful fast and he decided to sit down and rest for a little while. So he rested his gun on the, or is it rifle? One of you outdoorsmen help me. Anyway, he rested his gun on the trunk of a tree and he sauntered over a few feet away and perched himself and leaned back to rest on another tree. While he was dozing, a bear came by, and the bear woke him up. And here was the bear standing between Willie and his gun. He didn't know what to do. So he looked down there, and about 50 yards in front of him, off to the left a little bit, was a tree. And with the tree, there hung a pretty low limb, a pretty low branch. And Willie thought, he said, by golly, I can't get to that gun, but if I could make it to that branch, I think I got it made. So he jumped up and he took off running. I guess he must have covered that 50 yards in about 3 seconds. And Willie said that when I got to that branch, when I got near that branch, I just jumped for all I could just jump for. And the guy said, well, come on, Willie, what happened? He said, what happened? He said, well, I missed it on the way up, but I sure got it coming back down. As Tom mentioned, we have two very fine sons at home. Unfortunately, one of them isn't feeling good right now, and this is the reason that my wife, Sandy, is not here tonight. But let me just, if you will, please, relate one story to you that I have heard. This thing has happened before, but I really and truly didn't believe that it was anything more than a story. Our youngest son, Jeffrey, came home last summer with a full-size picture of Bob Hayes. It was an advertisement, but it was really a good-looking picture of Bob Hayes with an autograph and everything on the thing. Yeah, it was in color. Well, I asked Jeffrey, I said, boy, Jeff, where'd you get that picture? That sure is a nice-looking picture. And he said, well, Dad, a friend of mine gave it to me down the street. I said, wait a minute, Jeffrey, wait. He said, You mean he just gave you that picture? I know there must be hundreds of youngsters or maybe thousands across the country that would give anything to have a picture like that. You mean he just gave it to you? And I could see Jeff was kind of pondering with something there, and he kind of hung his head a little bit, and he said, well, no, Dad, he didn't exactly give it to me. I had to trade 3 pictures of you to get it. That actually happened. Athletics have meant a great deal to me, needless to say. The things that I've gotten out of athletics have have developed into what I think a unique affair. By that, I mean specifically how well I get along with players on the Dallas Cowboys. I think it takes on special implications because it's teamwork, and teamwork alone, that enriches a team to greatness. A case in point, let's picture for a minute the Dallas Cowboy defense. Number 34, Cornell Green, races up from his left cornerback position, and he nails Leroy Kelly at the line of scrimmage on truly a great play. Chuck Halley comes over, and he slaps Cornell on the back and says, great play, Cornell. And truly, it was a great play. Well, Bob Lilly isn't upset with this thing going on because it was Cornell that made the tackle rather than, say, Mike Gechter. At the same time, Mike Johnson, Willie Towns, Jethro Pugh, Mel Renfro, Cornell, they're not upset. These players I just mentioned are all Negro players. They're not upset because it was not perhaps Mike Gechter or Dave Edwards that made the play. I consider athletic ability a wonderful, wonderful blessing. Through football and through athletics, I've had a chance to meet a lot of wonderful people. I'd like to give you just a little bit of insight as to what type people actually make up players on the Dallas Cowboys. I think this can be said of all sports in general, not just the Cowboys. I think that the Cowboys typify a team of the National Football League, or perhaps the American Football League as well. As you might guess, we've got different type people on our football team. This does not make us unique in any way at all, but it does give us one thrust. We've got but one goal, and that's to have the very best team in professional football. I can't help but feel that athletics play a major role, if not the major role, in developing and molding young people into useful citizens. As I've had a chance to watch several times, and I've done it very enthusiastically and with a great deal of pride, as I've watched Leroy Jordan, number 55, who backs up the line for the Dallas Cowboys. Leroy, as you may or may not know, was raised in the South. I mean, he was raised in the South. He was raised in Alabama. He'd gone to segregated schools where it was pretty generally accepted that Negroes were not on the same level as people of his class. I think it's quite possible, as a matter of fact, I would bet my life, that Leroy has been the perfect gentleman that he is today all of his life. I found it very interesting as I've watched Leroy several times. Exhibit a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for whatever cowboy made a big play. I don't think that Leroy is any different than most athletes that we find today. Athletes working together, sweating together, playing together, and at times crying together, and certainly praying together. For one cause that will elevate them above the rest as the best in the business. The harmony, the poise, and the confidence exemplified by a team like the Dallas Cowboys or the Green Bay Packers or perhaps the Cleveland Browns, I think, is a lesson well taught, and I sincerely believe that it's a lesson that we could all study and learn from. This harmony on athletic teams by players black and white is more than just a necessity, but we found it to be an extremely heartwarming, wonderful way of life. A life in a world somewhat lacking in brotherly love. And you might ask, how in the world do I tie in brotherly love with a sport as sometimes brutal as professional football? Well, here's the way I do it. Brotherly love, of course, is not something that is taught. It isn't something that you practice like I would go out and practice my cuts and practice catching the ball. Or it isn't something that you would practice like you would practice your follow-through as you head down the fairway. Or it isn't practice like you might practice shooting baskets from 20 feet out. I think it's practiced, and I think it's taught through respecting the person in front of you, respecting the person perhaps next to you. I guess you might ask, in talking about brotherly love, I guess you might ask, was there brotherly love on Sam Huff's mind one Sunday afternoon in the Cotton Bowl when he grabbed our quarterback Don Meredith and slammed him to the Cotton Bowl turf and gave him a slight concussion? Well, no, that part wasn't brotherly love. That was exemplifying what makes a truly great athlete, a great competitor. The brotherly love came in later on as Sam asked very sincerely, is Don all right? I think brotherly love does play an important part in athletics. Without brotherly love, I think team sports themselves would be obsolete. But with it, I think we see the success stories of the Los Angeles Dodgers or the St. Louis Cardinals in baseball, the Boston Celtics or the Philadelphia 76ers in basketball, the Green Bay Packers or the Dallas Cowboys in professional football. Brotherly love. I sought my soul and could not find it. I sought my God. My God eluded me. But I sought my brother, and I found all three. As you probably know, there can be many, many very, very heartwarming and memorable thrills in athletic competition. I feel that I've been extremely blessed. Being able to play professional football is certainly a blessing in itself, but I've had the privilege and the thrill of being able to play for 11 years, and I can't accept this as certainly anything less than quite a marvelous blessing. Another thrill that I can remember very well, although some people laugh at it, most people do as a matter of fact, in 1962, I caught a touchdown pass from a quarterback who is quite a tremendous person in himself, and those of you who have followed pro football will remember the name Eddie LeBaron. Eddie threw a pass to me in that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1962. I caught the pass and outran the defensive back, and the play covered 99 yards. That's a big thrill for me. But when I got down to the end zone, I turned around and I noticed everybody else was back down at the other end of the field. I couldn't figure it out until, well, about 2 seconds later it dawned on me that something was wrong, and it was. Well, a penalty erased this play, but it wasn't Eddie's fault and it wasn't my fault. And because of that, it will always be a big thrill to me. I guess it'll be a big thrill, too, because, well, you can't do any better than 99 yards on a play from scrimmage. I don't know how many of you realize this, but you just can't be done. And needless to say, it was a big thrill for me. In our 1966 championship game in the Cotton Bowl against the Packers, I had the privilege of catching a 68-yard touchdown pass that, well, without a doubt, was a great thrill for me. It was a big thrill for three main reasons, I think. The first is because it gave the Cowboys renewed impetus and enthusiasm in a ball game that we just weren't sure what was going to happen. It looked dark several times during the game. But this play gave us a new life, and it gave us a chance to move in and tie the Packers and perhaps send that game into overtime. But it was a big thrill also because my mother and father and brothers and sisters had come down from Wisconsin to watch the ball game, and they told me how thrilled and pleased they were over that touchdown and especially over the entire effort by the entire Cowboy football team. Another reason it was a big thrill for me is because my wife sat up there and watched that game, and she was fit to be tied. She'd gone through quite a bit of rough times in the 10 years that we had been in professional football. A lot of it was a little rough, and it was especially rough on her. And I think that maybe this is the way God has it planned, that these women, although they may look a little frail, I believe that their shoulders are extremely broad and extremely strong. But she took it all very well. And I know that there was not a person in the Cotton Bowl, there was not a person in anybody's den or living room that was more delighted over that 68-yard touchdown pass than was my wife, Sandy. The thrill of being here tonight, the thrill of being asked to come to share some of my feelings, is a meaningful thrill for me. And along with this thrill, the thrill of being the father of three fine children, of having a wonderful wife, of having a strong body, of being able to compete, of being able to realize and know what right and wrong, and realizing and being able to accept a person for what they are. These are all great thrills to me. But I'll be very honest with you. These thrills don't come close to the thrill that I have when, first of all, I know that I'm serving my fellow man as he would have me to serve him. And equally as much, the thrill that is mine when I know that I'm serving Jesus Christ as he would have me to serve him. As you might guess, old Frank's got a problem. I don't serve Jesus Christ as he would have me to. As much as I hate it, as much as I regret it, I sin. But I find a tremendous amount of consolation. And what a loving God he is. Even though we sin, he's able to grant us the consolation that will keep us going, so that when it's all said and done, we'll have a happy resting place. A prayer that I remember and that I think about, and I have for years, has meant an awful lot to me. Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof. If you speak but the word, my soul will be healed. Now, this doesn't give Frank the opportunity, or doesn't give him the satisfaction, or does it give him the privilege of going out and doing exactly what he wants to, and all he has to do is say, speak but the word and my soul will be healed. It doesn't mean that at all. It simply means that I know that as a human being, I'm not infallible, and I sincerely believe that this and that I and that each of us here are a part of God's plan. And his plan includes the sin of myself and perhaps the sin from time to time of someone here. I don't believe that I'm on this earth necessarily, or perhaps in any way at all, to be a professional football player. I don't believe that I'm here to be the father of our children. I don't believe that I'm here to toil at any particular labor. I believe that I'm here to use all of these tools to love, to use all of these tools as a way to serve Almighty God. And he knows, and I hope that I will do just that.